You better come on in my kitchen. There's far too big in her door.
Come over here, kid. Why, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see? You start out with a little bit of oil. And you fry some garlic.
It's
and you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. And you gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. And a little bit of wine. And a little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce. Potatoes,
yeah. I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. How are you doing this evening? Thanks for tuning in. We should have a really great show tonight. I hope you've been able to get out to a farmer's market or two this weekend. Harvest is in its full breathtaking glory right now. It's just amazing. I probably was at the farmer's market in Sebastopol for 45 minutes before I bought a single thing because I couldn't make up my mind. And I have such a tendency to overbuy. But I ended up coming home with some beautiful peach tomatoes, which I have not seen in so long. Sometime in the 90s, there was someone who was growing them. And, you know, they have just a little teeny tiny bit of fuzz on them. They don't taste anything like peaches. Oh, they're so good. And now it turns out that Nancy Skull of Middleton Gardens has some. And just before I came to the station, I had a little tomato sandwich with the peach tomatoes. Anyway, we're talking about all kinds of produce tonight because we are exploring the upcoming second annual National Heirloom Exposition. We have in the studio with us Paul Wallace of the Seed Bank and the force behind the expo, I believe.
Hi, Michelle. Thanks for having us on the air tonight.
I'm so happy that I know you're so busy with the expo starting in just a few days.
Well, it's teamwork, you know. So we got a reasonable team this year. So I can tear away for a few minutes, and it's great to be here. Thank you.
And we also have John Valenzuela representing the California Rare Fruit Growers.
Yes.
And the Rare Festival of Rare Fruit is now going to be part of the expo, correct?
The Festival of Fruit will have speakers in the mornings that kind of fills in that morning space that, for the venues there, and we'll be having tastings and exhibits, and we're really thrilled to join the National Heirloom Expo again. We had some displays last year, and we're expanding this year and having our own little Festival of Fruit.
Cool. And then also with us is, if I say this right, Katrina Fry.
That's right.
Excellent. And you're with Demeter USA.
I am. I'm the president of the board. I'm also the executive director of Fry Vineyards, which is a biodynamic winery.
Right.
But I'm here tonight with my Demeter hat on.
Uh-huh. And the studio is full of beautiful produce. So why don't we start with just what we have here? Because I'm curious, especially about those long red beans.
These are red noodle beans. And Paul just asked me if it's baker's seed, and, you know, a friend of mine gave them to me. I think they are, but I'm not 100% sure. But they are open-pollinated seed, which I'm sure Paul could talk to us more learnedly about than I do. But I try to, in my garden, only use open-pollinated varieties because they are seeds that we can save and pass on to the next generation. But they're amazing. They're maroon color, and they're about two feet long.
Yeah, 2 feet long.
Yeah, and they're delicious.
How do they taste?
They taste very nice. They taste somewhat sweet and somewhat nutty. So a little different than a regular bush bean.
Okay.
But I've just been chopping them up and steaming them and eating them raw in my garden.
And they're easy to pick.
They're very easy to pick.
Because you can tell them apart from the foliage.
Exactly. That's true. The green beans always tend to hide.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
They're a beautiful maroon-red color that just jumps out at you.
Here you have to have one to fondle here.
Yeah, we used to grow some of these in Hawaii. They're a relative of cowpeas, and sometimes they'd call them yard-long beans also.
Right.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
Oh, this makes me want to try making...
necklace.
A green yes. There we go. I was going to say green papaya salad, which calls for long beans, and it would be fun to use these. But a necklace, a tiara, there are so many possibilities. What else do you have in there?
These are all from my backyard garden, Biodynamic Farm. So I have lemon cucumber, which is an heirloom variety, which Baker Seed carries, and they're a wonderful cucumber. They're about... as big as a, tennis ball,
I guess? Yeah, about the size of a tennis ball.
And they have a wonderful quality of never getting bitter.
Nice.
So you can eat them from when they're a little bigger than a walnut all the way up to this size. And they're prolific. I have 4 plants, and every time I go out, I have a basket full. So
it's great healthy snack for kids, too. I mean, they can eat it like an apple.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Kids love them.
Right.
So refreshing on a hot day. Just
absolutely.
Crunch.
Crispy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. I have some Allen Chadwick cherry tomatoes. And the reason that I always grow those is I had the very good fortune of being an apprentice with Allen Chadwick, who coined the term French intensive biodynamic.
Oh, uh-huh.
And he started the Hillside Gardens at the University of Santa Cruz, and then he had several gardens throughout Northern California. I crossed paths with him in Covelo, California. Mm-hmm. And that's when I first learned the principles of biodynamic farming. Mm-hmm. This is a red Cherokee tomato, a jalapeno, let's see, I have another heirloom tomato. There's a Brandywine hiding in here, and then a Hungarian wax pepper.
Nice-looking pepper. Mm-hmm. And then just moving right over to John, you have all different kinds of fruit.
Tell me
about that giant pear.
The giant pear is literally called the pound pear.
The pear that ate Chicago.
Yeah, it's not quite ready yet. It's a late pear, and it's really a very old variety. I was looking it up, and it's at least from 1700 in Europe, in England, but it may be more ancient than that. Mm-hmm. And it's such an old type that you can't even get it to ripen properly. It's more of a storage and cooking pear.
Oh, okay.
And so they would ship these all over the world back then. And one method they use in France is they'll just wrap it all up in a pastry sheet and bake it whole like that.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's a cooking pear, which is not that common these days. This actually comes from a tree that's perhaps 150 years old out in Belvedere, which was also known as Cashew's Island. And so there's these kinds of stories where we're finding these old trees and bringing back these old varieties. And through our scion exchanges that we have to share the actual propagation material, we are helping people grow them again, just as you do with in the seed banks and heirloom seed companies.
Right.
We're sharing that genetic material. So the big pears, here's a famous American pear, the Seckel pear, which is known as the honey pear.
Mm-hmm.
So good. We have apples from some famous for this area, the Pink Pearl and Gravensteins. And in fact, one of our speakers we're having is working at Fort Ross, where they have a 200-year-old orchard there at the Fort Ross out there in along the coast in Sonoma. And some of the first trees perhaps were Gravensteins there.
Uh-huh.
So, and I also have some figs and grapes. We had a fig and grape tasting out at Wolfskill, which is the United States Department of Agriculture has a whole collection of fruit trees out there, hundreds of varieties out in Winters near Davis.
Yes.
There's an old place called the Wolfskill Experimental Orchard, And John Wolfskill was an early pioneer in the area and established his orchard there. Much later, it was given to the university, and they have the collection now, the germplasm repository, they call it. And they have thousands of grapes. They have 2,700 varieties of grapes, over 100 varieties of figs. So I brought some. We're going to taste these tonight, you guys. And, of course, we have to have some Luther Burbank fruit.
Absolutely.
We're here in Santa Rosa.
Fluots.
We have some elephant heart plums. And then in that lineage, Luther Burbank taught a guy named Anderson, who went on to breed a lot of nectarines. Later, Anderson taught a guy named Floyd Zeiger. And Floyd Zeiger came up with these crosses now we call pluots. So it's Floyd Zeiger has these modern hybrids that we call pluots and apriums, and he's in the lineage of Luther Burbank, actually. So these are maybe our future heirlooms once they come off of patent.
Right. And this is just a little tiny fraction of what one will see at the heirloom exposition. So let's now go back to the whole reason that we're here and how and why. It started last year.
Right. About 2 years ago, Ger Gettle and his family and I, we went to an heirloom auction in Sotheby's in New York. And the plan was to raise funds for farmers in the general Hudson Valley area. And it was an exclusive affair. And there wasn't a lot of produce on display, but there was a lot of funds raised for the cause.
And what were they auctioning?
They were auctioning garden-related items. So, you know, maybe a flock of geese, or you know, you could name someone's chickens or goats, or a farm tour, or a stay at someone's house or someone's farm, and it was a high end affair.
Sure.
And we felt it would be nice if we could have an event where it was affordable to everyone. Everyone could attend. There were no restrictions, and we could just showcase the diversity that our country had to offer. And a lot of people don't realize where their food comes from and the importance of eating locally and eating seasonally. So we decided, we picked Santa Rosa, seeing as we have a store in Petaluma, the Petaluma Seed Bank.
And what, when did that open?
We opened in 2009.
Okay.
At the seed bank. And so we decided to rent the fairgrounds, one building, and fill it with produce, and people could come and ooh and ah and see what the diversity was like. And we felt it would be an educational opportunity. But as the event grew, we added other elements. So we thought we'd have some speakers, educational speakers. And then we added livestock and poultry show and a giant pumpkin contest. And then we felt, wow, you know, this really should benefit some worthy cause. So we felt that we'd use it as a not-for-profit event, with any funds generated over and above our costs would go to school gardens or other food programs. Mm-hmm. So then we had a kids' day, the middle day. This is a three-day event. Mm-hmm. It's midweek. It's a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So the Wednesday last year was kids' day, where we had about 800 school kids bussed in for fun but educational activities, seed-saving classes and movies and egg and spoon races and potato sack races. And then we had another one called the Heirloom Olympics, which was like a treasure hunt, where you'd go, you'd meet a farmer, you'd talk to the farmer, find out something about a particular variety of produce, and then you'd visit another farmer, find out about their livestock, and then maybe take one of the educational classes, and you filled up your Heirloom Olympic card, and you came back and got a prize at the end of the day.
Cool.
So this year we have that again, but we also have many other kids' activities. We're expecting about 1,000 school kids this year to be bussed in.
From Sonoma County or from other areas?
From other areas, too. We have them coming as far away as Yosemite or down to Hayward or up to Lake and Mendocino counties as well. So admittance for 17 and under is free. Mm-hmm. So basically, we want to encourage as many of the youth to participate. After all, they're the future of the industry, as it were. And then we have about 30 school groups participating with exhibits from their school gardens. Now, this year in our exhibit hall, we hope to have about 4,000 varieties of produce on display. California rare fruit growers alone will have, in their festival of fruit display, they're taking about 35 tables, 8-foot tables of produce on display. The school groups will take about 30. Ourselves, Baker Creek, we have two grow-out gardens, and this year we've filled probably a third of the hall ourselves alone from our test gardens. And so in a nutshell, this there are many facets to the event as well. We have about 300 like-minded vendors. Mm-hmm. In two different vendor halls, and these are all food, farm, or gardening related vendors, very focused. Mm-hmm. No hot tub on a stick, hot dog on a stick vendors, or the hot tub people, or the kitchen remodels. Not that there's anything wrong with that. We just wanted to keep the event focused as possible on pure food.
Exactly.
And then we have about 30 food vendors. So if you're looking for, we did a buyout at the fairgrounds. So if you're looking for food here, it will be, you know, of a quality in keeping with the theme of the event. So if you're looking for a burger, for example, it'll be a grass-fed beef burger, locally sourced produce, mm-hmm. locally baked bun. And then we have all sorts of selection from, dairy-free ice cream through Lydia's is a prominent food vendor in this area. Lydia's has a booth. And
I know Dominique's Sweets.
Dominique's
is going to be there
absolutely.
With apple pies.
Absolutely, absolutely, locally baked. And so between the vendors, the livestock, we have a livestock show again this year, poultry show.
Yeah, I saw that you've added rabbits this year.
Rabbits again this year. We didn't have rabbits last year. Uh-huh. We just thought it would add a new dimension. Mm-hmm. We also have a mobile bee observatory from the Napa County Bee Keepers Association, and Rob Keller has an Airstream trailer converted to a mobile bee observatory. It's real educational.
That must be really interesting.
Absolutely. And then next to that, we're going to have the Sonoma County Beekeepers Association will be next to that. Mm-hmm. And this year we have five concurrent speaking locations with over 100 speakers.
Oh my gosh.
Educational speakers. Uh-huh. The founder of Slow Food Movement.
Right, Carlo
Petrini.
Petrini, yes.
Will be here from Italy, and he will be one of the keynote speakers. Percy Schmeiser coming from mm-hmm. Canada, a farmer from Canada that has a interesting story to tell.
Yeah, we've had him on Mouthful, but only by phone from his home.
Right, nice man.
Yes,
really
very
nice gentleman.
Very compelling story.
Absolutely, absolutely. We have speakers coming from South Africa and Nigeria, but most of our speakers are US-based. People like Andrew Kimbrell from the Center for Food Safety, mm-hmm. Ronnie Cummins from the Organic Consumers Association, people like Deborah Coons Garcia, who was producer of a movie, The Future of Food.
Yeah, she was on just before the movie came out.
Right. And she has another new movie out now called Symphony of the Soil.
Yeah. Oh, that's the final title. Okay,
right. Symphony of the Soil.
Great.
And people like Jeffrey Smith, who's probably our nation's foremost authority on genetically modified organisms or mm-hmm. the issues surrounding that. Mm-hmm. He has a wonderful book called Genetic Roulette. Interesting.
Uh-huh.
So overall, over 100 speakers, several panels, seed panels, interesting educational panels. American Livestock Breeds Conservancy joins us again this year mm-hmm. and is helping with the poultry and the livestock areas and with some speaking engagements too. And of course, we're real happy to have the California Rare Fruit Growers Association on board this year with their Festival of Fruit. One other interesting area this year, we didn't do it last year to the same extent. We did have quite a few biodynamic gardeners or biodynamic booths in our vendor area. And this year, Demeter is sponsoring this incredible area. I don't know how many thousand square feet it is.
Demeter's what, mm-hmm. biodynamic lounge?
Absolutely.
I don't know either, but I know there are 35 different
vendors,
Demeter
right.
Farmers certified, and
right.
certified entities that are all working together to do it. But it's amazing what's
incredible.
Going to be in there.
And it's incredible. There's a biodynamic, there's a lounge where people can go and relax and get information. There's also a lecture hall where we have further talks. I mean, it's
we have 21 speakers throughout the 3 days, and every hour from, I believe, 11 to 5, there'll be a teacher about some aspect of biodynamic farming.
So we're real excited to have that as part of the expo again this year.
This is a massive undertaking. How many people behind the scenes and in front of this, how many people does it take to pull, not counting the vendors, but to construct it, to make this happen? How many people are involved?
You know, we're real mom and pop-ish. We work in a shoestring and, uh-huh. and we keep it as tight as possible and we're real low-key right up to mm-hmm. the very end. And we the small core in the office, you know, taking calls, right. making calls, sending out brochures. And our staff in Missouri also helped a lot, Baker Creek headquarters, and uh-huh. sending out mailers to the media and just general outreach as well. Mm-hmm. But we're fairly low key, you know. We're not event organizers at heart. You know, we just put it together. But what's interesting is the energy surrounding the pure food movement. Mm-hmm. And last year, you know, no one would have thought for a first year with an event like this being midweek that we would have had, you know, 11,000 to 12,000 people show up. And it was just incredible, a real tremendous energy mm-hmm. associated with the event.
Mm-hmm. Is there a particular day that's busiest, or is it pretty steady?
It's pretty steady. Mm-hmm. Last year, most days were fairly similar. I'm guessing last day on the Thursday, we probably had the edge a little, because our main keynote speaker on the Thursday was Dr. Vandana Shiva from India. Mm-hmm. And she has a huge following, and she packed that audience, about 1,200 people, came to see Dr. Shiva. Uh-huh. Now, Dr. Shiva had committed to come back again this year. However, she was awarded a grand prize in Japan. She had a delegation come from Japan about 2 months ago and asked her would she come and appear for this award. And it was a tough call on her behalf. Uh-huh. So she contacted us and said, hey, would it be okay if I did a recorded talk this year instead of being there personally? But I really want to come in future years and be involved uh-huh. with this pure food movement that you're, you know, spearheading here in California. So she will definitely join us again in the future. And we have a recorded talk of hers on 11 o'clock on the Tuesday.
Oh, okay, great. We're going to take a little musical break and we'll be back with more talk about the upcoming Heirloom Exposition.
Yeah.
You're listening to Mouthful here on KRCB. My guest this evening, Paul Wallace of the Seed Bank, Katrina Fry of Fry Vineyards and Demeter USA, and John Valenzuela, I know that, of California Rare Fruit Growers. Quick question. The heart of the exposition is for these 4,000 varieties. I know that they're on display. Are they also for sale? Are they offering tastes? What actually happens with it?
Okay, the prime objective is to showcase the diversity that's out mm-hmm. there. As part of the event, we also have, a farmer's market. Okay. So the produce is for sale in the farmer's market.
Oh, so there's a whole farmer's market section.
There's a whole section for farmer's market in addition to the other areas. Now, the produce on exhibit is also certainly available for tasting. Not all of it, but there are certain tasting stations. We've got two tasting stations in that main Hall of Flowers building, and we have tasting stations also in a homesteading hall. So we have scheduled tastings, and people will be able to come and taste different types of tomatoes, different types of watermelons, different fruits. California Rare Fruit Growers also has scheduled tastings throughout the course of the event.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. And so, where in the fairgrounds will the farmer's market portion be?
Farmer's market portion will be directly inside the Brookwood Avenue entrance. So as you come in Brookwood Avenue entrance, the turnstiles there, as if you were walking towards the main area mm-hmm. of the fairgrounds, on your left-hand side is that big open field that the carnival rides are at for the fair. Well, just along the edge or the median strip there will be the farmer's market, so lined all along.
Excellent. Right. I saw someone... I think it's a chicken, a producer of chicken and eggs, mentioned that they were going to have fresh chickens and soy-free eggs at the market. So that's when I thought, so you're going to be able to buy stuff
for sure
as well.
Yeah.
So we're going to taste some things right now, too. So one question before we start tasting. Rare fruit growers. Is that fruit that, well, it's not just fruit that comes from trees because you have grapes there. So is it all kinds of fruit that this organization represents?
Pretty much all kinds of fruit. Rare fruit is a relative term, I guess you could say. I think rare fruit is really anything off your own backyard tree mm-hmm. that's tree ripened. That's a rare fruit because you
don't
get
that. It's like a real watermelon that's grown for taste and not to not have seeds and
stuff
like that.
Now, there's annual fruits like our vine crops like mm-hmm. the melons and stuff. Mostly we are interested in tree fruits, most of us, but we have shrubs. And if you really look at our mission statement, mm-hmm. we're really interested in all kinds of edible plants, really.
Okay.
So we have a pretty broad embrace. Yeah. But when you talk about rare fruits, it's not only exotic fruits, like we're going to have somebody coming up from Los Angeles with those really interesting looking dragon fruits. Have you ever heard of those?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the cactus fruit called the dragon fruit, and we'll have some tastings of that. But so that is what I might call exotic fruit. So that's one type of rare fruit. Mm-hmm. But also, I think these heirloom varieties that we're going to be focusing on at this exposition are also rare. Some of them are actually found in common stores, like the Bosque pear. That's a very old pear variety, but mm-hmm. it's a very common one, too. Mm-hmm. But some of these varieties, like we're going to taste right now, have been kind of lost, and we're trying to rediscover them. And mm-hmm. so even though they're common apples and plums, they're kind of rare because they're almost forgotten varieties that could be hundreds of years old.
Yeah, and plus we're in Sonoma County. If you go very far out of Sonoma County and you're shopping only in a supermarket, you start to realize how lucky we are to have the diversity that we have here, you know, all the time. And then you add to it, you know, the exposition, and brings some people in from other areas, and they would be astonished.
We have a wonderfully blessed climate here in California, and Luther Burbank, when he bred his little potatoes and got a couple hundred bucks or whatever it was and made it out west.
300.
And this is the place he picked as the most perfect place to breed fruits from all over the world.
Do you know why he left Massachusetts?
I think, he had started farming there when he was young, but I think he just made his money and wanted to come out west to do more. What do you know?
He had a broken heart.
Ooh.
He had a broken heart. He sold He kept a pocket full of potatoes for himself. He sold the rest. He got $300 and had to get away to mend his broken heart. And that is one of my favorite stories in the world. It just makes me love him even more.
Well, you know, just less than a mile from the fairgrounds where the expo will be is the Burbank House and Gardens, Home and Gardens. And we're going to have, as one of our speakers, Bob Hornback, who's a renowned historian of Luther Burbank.
Yes, absolutely.
He's got a bunch of those interesting stories like you're telling there.
Yeah. So what else are we trying? What else are we trying here?
Well, since we're talking about Luther Burbank, one plum of his is called the Elephant Heart Plum, and it's a beautiful dark plum. I'd call it a blood plum if you want to bite into it and take a look at the inside of it here.
I want to dress that color. It's really beautiful.
That's good.
Really deep vermilion, really gorgeous.
It has a little crunch, but it's very sweet. And it's somewhat freestone. It's an excellent fruit. And it's 100 years old.
Very sweet.
It's one of the last plums that are still hanging on the trees this time of the year. And it's just one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's really good.
Now comparing an old taste with a new taste, this little golden one here is a pluot, which is a cross between a plum and an apricot with a little bit more plum in it. Is a hybrid that Floyd Zeiger developed. Let's taste that one.
I think everyone thinks that Luther Burbank developed this.
Oh, excuse me, that's a juicy one. Well, Luther Burbank did some of the first crosses known as plum cots.
And I think people have just made an assumption without actually, you know, going back and
And through further back crossing, Floyd Zeiger's come up with this one. And so one of our talks will be from a stone fruit collector and third generation stone fruit grower, Andy Mariani, from Andy's Orchard down in Morgan Hill. He's coming up, and his talk is going to be comparing old tastes with new tastes. And like I said, and these are both in that lineage of Luther Burbank bringing in all that genes from all over, crossing them up, and then planting them out. And, I mean, out of thousands, he would come up with one good one.
Yeah.
And his neighbors complained that he was always burning trees at his farm. He doesn't grow trees. He burns trees because he would grow out so many and just choose one or two to keep and get rid of all the rest. So,
and he would burn them so that those couldn't propagate?
Well, they were just
no good.
Because the crossing, when you start, these are all complex hybrids. Now, when you're saving pure seed from annuals, you have to do a lot of work to ensure that you don't get them mixed up and crossed up by, you know, some are self-pollinating and easy to keep, but some you have to do isolation or bag them or whatever. The way we do it with these fruits is that they are complex combinations of each other. And if we want to save that same one, we don't plant them by seed.
Right.
We propagate them vegetatively, cuttings or so forth.
You propagate from cuttings from the trees.
Exactly. Yeah. The mother tree.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
my step-grandfather used to do a lot of grafting. I remember watching him. He was very precise with both his tree fruit and his flowers. It was very interesting to watch.
We have classes in grafting at our sign exchanges, so anybody can learn it. But there's also a lot of things you can just grow by cuttings. A lot of the biblical fruits, like figs and grapes, which maybe will taste nice. Pomegranates. And olives are all propagated by cuttings. So shall we taste a couple of figs and grapes? We have a beautiful fig here.
Yeah, this would be called what would it be called?
Well, it's very unique in that it has beautiful stripes on it.
Yes, I don't want to eat it. I want to wear it.
Yeah. Now, as it gets ripe, it gets really kind of blondy, golden, but these little green stripes will disappear. Inside, it's just like jam.
Oh, wow.
This one's called Panache. It's an old European type that has been marketed more recently as Tiger Stripe or Candy Stripe is what they're selling it recently in the farmer's market.
But so sweet. It's like jam.
Raspberry jam or something.
Yeah.
And these grapes we have, these are of an old flavor. They have seeds. They have that muscat kind of flavor. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure which muscat this is. I got them mixed up. But These are
sweet like honey.
So this is part of that collection at Wolfskill, and we're going to have a couple of speakers from the Wolfskill collection. John Priest is the head researcher there, and he's going to talk about their collection, and which is available to the public, and we help distribute that through our sign exchanges. And then also one of the head researchers for FIGS will be there. His name's Howard Garrison, and he conducted the tasting yesterday out there, and he's going to be talking about FIGS.
Great.
Now, this is one that needs the heat. It would do okay in Santa Rosa, but not in Petaluma. You know, okay. It needs the warmth.
It needs
yeah,
the heat.
This particular variety. Uh-huh.
Interesting. I want to pull Katrina in now, too. Probably we've tossed around the word biodynamic several times. And is there a succinct way to describe what it is for people who really have no idea?
Sure. Biodynamic farming is the oldest organized system of organic farming that we have. The philosopher Rudolf Steiner was an Austrian philosopher, and a group of German farmers came to him in the 1920s, and they were already experiencing the ravages of the introduction of chemical agriculture. After World War I, Germany and Europe was left with a lot of chemicals that had been used in chemical warfare, mm-hmm. and they started using them as pesticides and to kill the insects in their farms, and they also started converting them into fertilizers. And that quickly turned agriculture as we'd always known it on its head. So Steiner came up with this system of farming that is very common sense. It's based on making excellent compost. It's based on integrating animals, farm animals, into your landscape. And it's also based on influences that we can't always see, such as the cosmic influences. But all of us know, for example, that the moon affects the tides.
Lots of farmers plant according
right,
to the moon.
Right. So nowadays, biodynamic farming is a system that tries to treat the farm as a closed entity. So the idea is that what you need on the farm for fertility, you should be producing on the farm. So you shouldn't be bringing in bat guano from Chile and, you know, fertilizers from Texas. So you try to do it as much as possible with the resources of your farm. And backyard gardeners can do this too. Mm-hmm. So Demeter US is the institution that certifies all the biodynamic farms in the country. We have about 200 farms nowadays, and over 20 of them are here in Sonoma County.
We have quite a number here.
So I believe Sonoma County has the highest concentration of all the biodynamic farms in the U.S. right now. Uh-huh. Mendocino's not too far behind.
So what will be happening? What resources will there be for people who are interested at the lounge?
First of all, there'll be beautiful, a lot of beauty surrounding you, because we have different groups coming in to create these wonderful displays of plants. So we have Benzinger came and did a whole insectary. We have Malibu Compost coming to show how to build healthy soils and make compost. We have an edible garden by Harmony Farm Supplies. We have a livestock display that will show how livestock can fit in on a biodynamic farm. And then we also have a whole series of wonderful photographs about biodynamic beekeeping by a woman named Amanda Lane. And then also very compelling photographs by a photographer called Douglas Gayton called The Lexicon of Sustainability. And I think people will be quite won over by those. So come and enjoy the gardens. There'll be several hosts to answer any kinds of questions about biodynamic farming. There'll be a place to sit and have some biodynamic produce, and then the classes will happen.
Okay.
And I could mention a few of the classes, or we could...
Sure, what are the classes?
Well, Mike Ayalteyel is a Sonoma County beekeeper. He's working with the Melissa Garden outside of Healdsburg, and he's going to be talking about a biodynamic approach to living with the bees. Cynthia Sandberg from Love Apple Farms is going to be presenting several workshops about home vegetable garden design, how to work with the biodynamic planting calendar. Grover Stock, who does biodynamic special preparations, is going to be talking about that, specifically about how to improve your soils. And Harold Hoven is the professor and head gardener over at Rudolf Steiner College, and he's a real expert in saving seed. So he's going to be giving a workshop on how to save seed.
That's a good sampling. Thank you. Yeah. Interesting stuff. It's the sort of thing I really recommend if you have the time. Buy the $25 three-day pass so that you aren't trying to see everything in one day. I don't know how anyone could do that. You probably can't. There's too many things going on simultaneously.
I know. Last year I was there for one day, and I was getting more and more frantic as the day went on, trying to see everything that
I have a narrow window when I can go this year. Uh-huh. I can't go for all 3 days. I know. I wanted to come back to Paul now. For just a couple of minutes, tell us just a little bit about the Seed Bank. Seed Bank, beautiful building on the corner there of East Washington and Petaluma Boulevard, downtown Petaluma, old bank building.
Sure, yeah, we opened in 2009 in June. At the time, we had about 1,200 varieties of seed, and we took a short-ish lease on the building at the time because we figured, boy, you know, we're selling $2 packets of seed in this big old bank building. Is it going to work? However, you know, over the course of the first year, it exceeded our expectations. And then we renewed the lease for another couple of years just to kind of test the waters. And now we have a long-term lease on the uh-huh. property. It's really exceeded our expectations and continued to do so. Of course, it's not easy when you're selling $2 mm-hmm. packets of seed in a big old bank building. But we look at it as a place where people can come and meet. Virtually every week at the Seed Bank, we have events mm-hmm. or classes or movies or educational things. We don't charge. We look at it as a meeting place where people can come pretty much every Thursday night of the year. We have something mm-hmm. on there where people can come and learn something about food, farming, or gardening-related topics.
Yeah, and you also sell, I know you sell books.
Well, after the first few months, we decided to add some, you know, interesting things, you know, add-ons to the mm-hmm. gardening, to the seeds. So we did bring in a selection of books, and we continue to grow the book area. Mm-hmm. We have tools. We try to get as many locally produced items as mm-hmm. possible. However, with the books and the tools, you're kind of limited with that, but we've started introducing a lot of locally produced food items. Uh-huh. We now have the seed range up to almost 1,500 varieties of heirloom seed. Everything we carry is heirloom, and that includes primarily produce or vegetables, but also flowers and herbs. We just remodeled our basement, and we'll be opening in the basement here in the next month or so, and would like to extend the range of tools. Mm-hmm. Food items, and really be an all-round, you know, gardening store. But the main emphasis will still be on the seed. And speaking of seed, we didn't mention earlier, at the expo on Thursday from 3 to 5, we will have a seed swap.
Oh.
And the seed swap uh-huh. this year has been sponsored by a local organization called Seed Matters. And there are many other seed companies participating in the seed exchange, including, you know, Seed Savers Exchange. And
they're such a great organization.
Absolutely. And Southern Exposure Seeds and many other seed companies, local seed companies as well, participating in that. So if any of the listeners have seeds to share or exchange, that'd be a great opportunity, 3 to 5 on Thursday.
3 to 5 on Thursday. That's great. That is a great thing. So,
wanted to jump in and thank Paul also for this wonderful opportunity to educate people about Label 37, which is the California initiative to require labeling of genetically modified engineered ingredients. And so that vote is coming up in November, and there's many, many powerful speakers and displays that will be on hand for people to learn more about that.
Well, it's a really important issue. I mean, we, as a general consumer, have the right to know what's in our food. If we're labeling the ingredients and we're labeling, you know, the nutritional content, we should also have the ability to know if our food is tampered with in a laboratory. Mm-hmm. And then if you want to eat genetically modified foods, at least you have the ability to identify it. And if you don't want to eat it, then don't. I mean, when most countries in Europe are labeling, and Australia and New Zealand and Japan, well, you know, this educated nation, we should really take our head out of the sands in this issue. And
If you have to put how much salt is in something, you really have to say whether it's GMO or not.
Exactly.
That's just nuts.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I so hope that passes. I'm sort of... That's another show.
Right.
I think that's a hugely important issue. And when we had the... we had something in Sonoma County about it on the ballot a few years ago. And we did a big show on that and took calls. And I needed a flak jacket. Oh, my gosh.
Right, right.
Whenever we take calls, it tends to be about something controversial like that. And, oh, my goodness, it gets rather intense. But I will probably do, before the election, I will probably put together a show on this issue. Because I do think it is so important.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So there's some other things that we haven't touched on happening at the expo. So far we have a farmer's market, 4,000 plus varieties of produce, rare fruit, tastings, movies, speakers, the Demeter Biodynamic Lounge, and vendors and food. But there's also music.
Absolutely. We've got this year we have two music stages. Mm-hmm. The main music stage will be in Shade Park. Secondary music stage is in, I think, what they call the Mexican Village.
Absolutely.
Right. So we're opening up that area this year, which is actually quite close to the Demeter Lounge. Mm-hmm. And so two music stages plus other roving musicians, people like Petaluma Pete. I don't know, do you know Petaluma Pete?
Does he play piano?
Plays the piano.
Yes, I do.
Downtown Petaluma,
yes,
every
absolutely.
Friday evening. Incredible
he comes up
artist.
To Sebastopol sometimes and sits outside a store playing the piano.
Right, fabulous artist. Great
wrong
character.
With the piano?
I'll
find out.
Yeah. It's on a trailer. So, two music stages plus other roving musicians. And I'm trying to think, what else do we have going on there? It's just, of course, Mac Condell from the Great Pumpkin Patch Arthur, Illinois. He did this amazing pumpkin display last year, and he indicated that it was probably the biggest pumpkin display ever in the U.S., and this year he's making it even bigger. So he thinks he's going to have the biggest pumpkin display in the world.
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So anyone that's interested in coming to see this colorful display, please stop by. Now, you asked me earlier about the produce. Typically, the vendors that have produce on display, and when I say vendors, typically the individuals that have produce on display, be they backyard gardener or a farmer, they're welcome to take their produce home after the event, or they can donate it to, you know, one of the local food banks. Last year, we sold off quite a few of the pumpkins that were on display, basically to pay, you know, defray some of the costs involved in acquiring them. Are growing them. We probably do the same again this year. So a lot of the display will be sold and Thursday evening, after the last keynote speaker. And then whatever's left over, we'll donate to one of the local food banks.
Oh, great.
Right.
Great. Now, let's talk about some of the nuts and bolts.
Sure.
Best way to get tickets?
Several ways. Okay. Number one, the Seed Bank in Petaluma has tickets. Number two, go to the website, theheirloomexpo.com. Mm-hmm. There's a ticket button. You can buy your tickets online or at the gates at Bennett Valley Road or Brookwood Avenue.
And what about parking? Is there a charge for parking?
The parking has been handled by the fairgrounds. There's limited parking, I believe, on Bennett Valley Road. And then
Much on the road at all.
Right. And then on Brookwood Avenue, there is a big parking lot there.
Right.
And the fairgrounds takes care of parking. There is a charge. I don't know what it is.
And I want to add, if you don't want to stand in line and buy a ticket at the booth, if you go online and buy it, you can just get in line to get in the gate. And that's what you'll need to do if you want to come to some of our earlier talks. Our California Rare Fruit Grower Festival of Fruit will be featuring speakers actually before the exhibit halls open at 11. So from 9 to 10 and 10 to 11, we'll have some early venues operating then. So buy your ticket online and then just walk
so
right in at 9 o'clock.
You will be able to get in at 9.
Absolutely.
For our talks, and that'll pretty much be the only thing open at that time in the morning, but then at 11, the rest of everything opens. So that's a really great way to avoid some lines is to buy those tickets.
And it's a great
online.
Way to just get in parking early. Right.
And that gate is close to the speakers, venues, and so forth.
It is. It is. It's in close proximity there. Uh-huh. And ticket prices, so for adults, it's $10 a day, mm-hmm. $25 for a three-day pass, or if you're age 17 and under, it's free.
Which is just great.
Absolutely.
I love that it's free for, you know, not for five and under, 17 under.
Right.
That's really great. And then once you're inside, of course, you pay for food and that sort of thing. But what about the talks and the workshops and classes?
It's all included.
It's all included.
And for people to find out more what's happening in Demeter, you can go to our website, which is demeter-usa.org. And also you can Twitter at Demeter. But yeah, there's no charge once you're inside.
And on Mouthful's Facebook page, I will post, I already have a link to the Heirloom Expo, but I will post links to these others as well. When I get home this evening, I'll put those up on Mouthful's Facebook page. So you can, if you didn't write them down, you can check them out there. One last thing. We're almost out of time. We've got a lot in the studio to get out before Outbeat comes on. What's happening with rabbits? Just tell me what about the rabbit display.
Basically, this year, we had intended having a rabbit show, but we couldn't pull it together at the last minute. So we do have an unofficial rabbit show.
Okay.
But it's primarily a rabbit display.
Okay.
And they would be heritage breeds.
Heritage breeds.
Right.
So there might even be some of those beautiful lops.
Right. But definitely not an official show, an unofficial show. So we do have a rabbit judge coming to judge the rabbits.
But, and are these rabbits within the livestock, rabbits that are traditionally used for meat? Is it those sort of breeds? Or are these more show rabbits?
They're a combination of both, to be honest. Yeah, a combination of both. Right.
Because I think people forget, or a lot of people never knew, that rabbits were raised on almost every farm in America 100 years ago as a very environmentally friendly and good approach to good protein.
Right.
And probably starting about 15, 14 years ago, when you started seeing rabbit on more menus and available in markets, the anti-eating rabbit lobby, got pretty violent. And so I've just been curious. It seems like suddenly there's rabbit now at farmers markets.
Mm-hmm.
So I was curious about that. And I mean, I think it's a good thing.
Right, absolutely. And following that as well, or maybe even leading that, you have, the basic chicken. I mean, if you look at the varieties of chicken that we have out there, we have primarily the chicken you buy in the grocery store, it's inflated with food and it matures in 7 or 8 weeks.
And they can't walk.
But a heritage variety is going to take maybe 16, 18 weeks. But the flavor, there is absolutely no comparison.
Got some at the farmer's market today. Got a meat breed. Yeah, it's hugely important. We could obviously talk for another hour, and on that note, I have to say thank you all very much for taking time out. I know you're busy. I will see you on Tuesday at the Heirloom Expo. Next week, I will not be here live in the studio, but we have a very special show for you all about Julia Child and the new biography, Deary. So have a great week. Meet me back here, at least in my voice, next Sunday at 7 for another episode of Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour.
Thank you.
Okay.
Once we get out there.
Okay. Someone is waiting to come in.
The Lord that praises me. It's time for dinner now. Let's go eat. We've got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher said. Story. Well, children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough.
Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour, is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan, who also selects Mouthful's music. Live episodes are engineered by Michael Young and occasionally by Mary Moore Campagna. Mark Fuller is Mouthful's recording and post-production engineer. Podcasts are available at iTunes and krcb.org. For more information, to suggest a guest, and to find out how to be a guest yourself, email catsmilk@sonic.net or send a message via Mouthful's Facebook page. Time for dinner, now let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says.